Honey, I'm going out. I'll be back in a couple hours.
You play Farmville and call yourself a gamer.
You said awesome, and I said I hate it.
Okay, so here we go. This is where the extended knowledge comes in.
Don't mind me. I'm just staring at a wall somewhere.
Can anyone afford Benedict Cumberbatch?
That's surprising.
I don't think a human could make those sounds.
Yeah, well, you can do it, though, can't you?
Yeah, I get it.
Hi, I'm Dean.
I'm Paul.
And I'm Jason. Welcome to Nerds Before Birds, the podcast where you'll find reviews, rankings, and general discussion on all things pop culture. This week on the show, We are talking. We're doing that.
We're talking this week. Holy crap.
No, we're taking a look at the new film, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Yes.
Hollywood.
Quentin Tarantino's ninth film in a directing career.
10th if you want to, if you subscribe to the theory that Kill Bill's Volume 1 and 2 are separate.
Yeah, well, he doesn't. So, Quentin Tarantino's ninth film in a directing career that will span 10 films if he keeps his word on that. So, We'll find out after the next movie whether that's actually a thing. What did you guys think of this movie? Where does it land for you? Does it soar? Does it flip the bird? Where is it for you, Dean?
I really hope that Tarantino doesn't end at 10 movies. I just love his stuff. Yeah. And this is definitely no different. I very much enjoyed this movie.
Yeah, right.
I loved it. Wouldn't call it my best Tarantino, like my favorite Tarantino
it's
film.
It's not your best Tarantino but film.
It's not my best Tarantino right, film, but no, I've done better.
You've done better. Yeah. That World War II one was pretty tight.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah, I'm really proud of that one. Same with Django.
Should be.
No, it is great. It is just so much fun. It's long and it can be slow at points, but at the end of it, I'm just sitting there going, that was fun.
Yeah.
That was hilarious. I enjoyed it. That's my thoughts.
Yeah, fair enough.
I feel like there might be some disagreements within the group, but we'll see.
Paul, what did you think of this movie?
Right now.
Yeah.
Look.
Was it the Buster Scruggs for you?
You did enjoy it.
I enjoyed it. Yeah. Here's the thing. I don't know if you can gauge how good a movie is based on how many times you check your phone. But I did check my phone quite a few times because it was like,
I'll admit I did check my phone.
We've only been here an hour.
Yeah, especially in the first 2 hours, I did find myself going, "Oh wait," and I was actually looking up things as well because I knew like a little bit, like I knew Sharon Tate's story, like I knew everything that happens there and all that kind of stuff. But I seen like all the dates coming up and I didn't know the date of what they were sort of counting down to. So I'm like, this is really bugging me. So I was like doing a quick Google search in the cinema, trying to work out like where it's counting down to kind of thing.
How much longer do we have to go kind of thing.
Yeah. I get.
But getting back to what I thought of it.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry. It is a discussion. It's not like just you on your own, Paul.
Doesn't have his salt hat on today. It was boring, but I took those moments to just kind of think about how Tarantino does stuff. Like, why is he choosing?
Yes.
Just analyzing stuff when you get bored. But here's the thing. Okay. I left the movie and I was like, okay, that was a film. That wasn't too bad. That was pretty funny at points and weird at other points. But then I did research.
Yeah.
And the sheer amount of stuff that he put in this film is amazing.
Yes. Did you?
It is mind-blowing.
Did you know, like I mean, like there's so many things that he does reference that were real in it. But did you know the basic story? Like, did you know about Roman Polanski and Sharon Tate? And
I knew nothing.
You knew nothing.
I knew absolutely nothing.
I'm interested to know. I went into
this very blind.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be more like Manson family murders, but I didn't really know too much about that. Right. So I was expecting something very different.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
I knew a fair bit about what actually went down. I was expecting to not be too many surprises kind of thing, but we'll get into the plot and we'll get into how things how he sort of plays fast and loose with some sort of elements of history, which he kind of does a little bit in Inglourious Basterds as well. So knowing you're watching a Quentin Tarantino movie, you kind of expect that it's not going to be true to history.
Yeah.
Which
it's, you know, like, you know, the, how, you know, you got like historical fiction as a genre. Well, Tarantino's is fictional history.
Yes. Yes.
And so
for sure,
that's right. That's definitely where he's going with
completely.
It. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but it soars for you, Paul. That's
Yeah.
Fair enough. So I had a lot of trouble, in the first 2 hours of this movie, like you, Paul, I was like, this is, like, it's really, it's almost frustrating because you're like, what are they trying to do? Like, what is this plot?
What's the point of this scene? What is the point
of any of this? Like, and I think it's a problem that I often encounter in any movie is if there's no sort of like ticking clock or something that they've got to do or overcome, like that's set up in the first act. It's kind of like, well, why am I watching this movie? And there's no sort of momentum to the plot. And I felt that was kind of the way that this is presented. There's no real momentum to the plot because you don't really know what's happening at all until...
It definitely just... Yeah. For the first 2 hours, it's like a whole bunch of just random scenes strung together without any consecutive plot or anything going on. You're just watching three people live out their life in Hollywood.
Yeah, and
that's what that's like. True. It's almost like a sketch show.
Yeah, and I was like, why am I watching this? Like, what is, what, like, and I was like you, Paul, I was like, what is the point of this movie? And maybe it is the whole thing that Tim was talking about when he was on the podcast where, like, you know, they have a song and dance at the end of a kid's movie and you feel really good about it. But this kind of has its own little song and dance at the end of the movie that in a weird kind of way where you could leave the cinema feeling pretty good about it. And I was
a literal Google search I did when I got home honestly was
the Tarantino Tango.
What was Once Upon a Time in Hollywood actually about?
Yeah. Yeah, fair enough.
I was like,
yeah.
What did I watch? And just then?
Without giving away spoilers, I found it very bittersweet. Like the ending, knowing the history.
Yeah. Yes.
Because, and I think I can see why, I'm trying not to give away anything, but there was a rumor around that said that Sharon Tate's sister had like given her blessing to Quentin Tarantino to have like her portrayed in this way, like Sharon Tate in this movie. And I can see what he's done with that, and it's kind of like a it is really beautiful what he's trying to say almost, and I really kind of appreciate that in a really sort of melancholy, sort of bitter but like really happy kind of, it's a really mixture of emotions.
I think I get what you're
saying, because
if
you know the real story, it's just so horrible.
Yeah, very much not that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I guess that sort of lends itself to the title of it being like Once Upon a Time.
Like it's in the title.
It's just a tale.
That's totally true.
Exactly. Yep. And that's it. But, well, even the beginning of Inglourious Basterds does the whole thing as well. It goes Once Upon a Time in Nazi-occupied France kind of thing. Like that in itself is like, okay, we're not watching a work of historical, like, non-fiction.
There's also the fact that, this being the ninth film that Tarantino's done, like, we have been conditioned to expect a certain kind of quality or certain type of movie from him. We expect the nonsensical conversations that ramble on and on and on, but then eventually lead to something. We expect all this, like, you know, just strange kind of visual imagery that then
I think
suddenly that's, but the payoff is what you need. Yeah. And I think this one definitely delivers at the end.
Oh yeah.
There are very few things that will top the conversation that was had by the KKK members in Django.
Oh, that's pretty funny. That is pretty funny.
That came out of nowhere. I loved it. It was so funny.
That is a really funny scene.
What are you wise make your assholes then?
That's Jonah Hill, right?
I think we can all agree
that's Jonah Hill,
that the hoods were a good idea.
Let's just say they could have been executed better.
Yeah. Executed better.
There's so getting good. Back to Once Upon a Time, there is so many cameos in this movie, isn't there? Like, just so many.
So
and
many.
I was wondering,
and
like,
so many quotable lines. Yeah.
There's
it's
a just lot.
Like, it's going to be
and
so
very
fun.
Good casting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like the casting, bloody. Like looking back at like when we get to sort of the Charles Manson stuff, that casting was amazing.
So yeah, Charles Manson, he's Damon Herriman. He's
nailed it.
He kind of knows the role a bit.
He does know the role a bit, so which I was surprised by because I've been watching Mindhunter. Have you been watching it too, Dean?
I have not. Yeah. I just knew that bit of trivia.
Yeah, so I just stole it. But what happened is the day afterwards, I was actually watching Mindhunter again. And I was like, oh yeah, I knew that Manson was coming up in Mindhunter. This guy comes out and he's doing like the whole conversation. I'm like, this is a completely different Manson to what I just watched him once upon a time in Hollywood. And I'm like, but this guy seems really familiar, the one that's playing Manson. Like, and I couldn't pick it. Hey, I like, cause his beard looks so different.
He's made
everything
up
like
completely
that.
Differently.
Yeah. Made up completely differently. It's the same guy playing both Manson. Roles. Like, and I was like, oh, that's crazy. And he plays it so differently in Mindhunter that it's kind of like, you can separate the performances much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was reading an interview that he was doing and talking about it and how he basically was like saying that one portrayal didn't kind of feed into the other because as he was researching Manson at these different points in time, he found out like they were just completely different people.
Yeah.
Yep. Like he was this charming, suave young dude. And then he was just like this crazy nut job in prison.
Yes.
Going on about everything. And it's like nothing, like it was just two different people that he was playing.
It's so true.
And there was like and neither one of the roles kind of led him to be cast as the other.
Right.
Either.
Yeah.
Like, so Tarantino didn't see him in Mindhunter and think, oh, I'll get you to play Manson or like vice versa. It was just all, I think it was actually Timothy Oliphant.
Around the same sort of time, right? Because Mindhunter
was filmed first.
Yeah, right.
Mm. So Mindhunter was filmed first.
Yeah, okay.
And then it was very late. It was like a couple of months into production for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood that they were like, oh, who are we going to get to play Charles Manson?
Yeah, right.
And Timothy Oliphant, who worked with him in... Lawless?
Not Lawless.
Not Deadwood.
No, not Deadwood. It's the other one.
But it's the one where he's the cowboy.
Oh,
Justified.
Justified. That's it.
So he's like, oh, what about this guy? And then it just so happened that, you know, he'd played Charles Manson before.
Yeah.
But
right.
So he played the older version first and then he came and played the younger version. Yeah.
And it does. It felt like a completely different actor, like, let alone performance. Mm. Like, I was like, he looks really familiar, but yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah.
It was crazy. When I actually found that out researching Once Upon a Time today. And I was like, wow, I did not, like, I knew him from somewhere, but I didn't know where.
And that is why.
It was the same role. It's the same person. It's crazy. But I think it soars. I thought it was actually pretty good. So before we get into the plot, Paul, do we have a review for the week? So if you don't
know,
inform people what we're actually doing.
Here's the
doing.
Rules, guys. Okay. And again, literally anyone can play, please.
Yep.
Literally
anyone can play.
We really want more players than us right now.
If you review us on Apple Podcast, on all the other places that you listen to podcasts, except for Spotify, if you leave us a 5-star review and then, you know, whatever you write within reason, I'll just read it on the podcast.
Yeah.
So if you want, if you hate the podcast, leave us a 5-star review and then you can follow it up with easily one of the worst podcasts my ears have listened to and I work in an abattoir.
Yeah.
You could do that. And I'd read it.
You could.
So today's podcast
was
review,
that one of them?
that was 4 stars. So
sorry. Didn't make the cut.
Sorry, buddy. Sorry.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we can't read that one on our podcast.
Yeah, like, yeah.
That's right. So we're not going
take
to.
That back.
But this one comes from All the Best Stuff's on Redbubble 69. And it just says T5 Podcast. So
what
there you go.
What was that?
It just says Tier 5 Podcast.
Tier 5
Podcast. Yeah,
I don't think that's good.
How many tiers are there?
Pretty sure Tier 1 is where you want to be. So I feel like we're getting negged. But that username suggests, there is some great stuff on Redbubble.
Maybe
if
it's
you
a,
want to get a little bit of NBB merch, head on over to Redbubble.
Yeah, beautiful.
And, you know, you can get it on a t-shirt.
You can get our face on your chest.
You get our face on your chest for money, obviously.
Anyway, oh, that sounds really weird.
Anyway, it really
don't
does.
Look into it.
How yeah. much are you charging?
Don't think about it too much. No, they're paying us.
Oh,
they're paying us. It's fine. It's okay. Legal. What?
Anyways, so hey, Hollywood. We're going to get into some spoilers for Once Upon a Time mm-hmm. in
Dear God, please.
Yes, we are.
Hollywood.
That was yeah, weird. You know, timing.
Well, yeah, no, but it's the ellipsis that's throwing me off because it's what's actually in the title, because there has to be a pause after Once Upon a Time in.
What are you talking about?
Jason's been listening to old radio plays again. No, come back to Once Upon a Time.
Oh, I see.
In
dot dot dot.
There is. Hollywood. It is. It's how it's written. I'm just doing.
On the poster. I'm not gonna do that all night. On the who cares? I don't care how much Tarantino wants to wank off. We're not doing this. All right. Look,
we will
Once
be back
upon
in
a time
pace.
In Hollywood.
I'm just respecting the artist.
I'd have watched 2 3/4 of an hour of him doing stuff.
Yeah, most of that is like beats, right? Like it's basically like the pauses between sentences. That's why it's so long.
Pretty much
it's kind of like, yeah, it's all
so
ellipsis.
Once upon a time in, go get a drink. Come
Hollywood. Yeah, yeah.
Hollywood.
Yeah.
Yes. All right. Hang on a second. Once upon a time in.
Jeez, you actually left.
Can we
so
just
he'll
like,
be back right. in about half an hour.
We should just wrap the podcast up now.
Yeah.
Just like, so that be gone when
gets
he gets
us
back.
To the end of this week's podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show. That's a bye from me.
Bye.
Do you want to say bye? You want to say bye?
Yeah, see you okay. later.
Well, Paul's already
subscribe.
Left. So, yeah. Bye. Bye. Bye, show.
Hollywood.
Cool. We'll see ya.
Oh. Okay.
We just bye, wrapped guys. While you were gone. Bye.
Ah, well, I called you bluff and I stopped recording.
Anyway,
all right, let's talk about this friggin' movie.
Yeah, we're going to get into some spoilers. So if you haven't seen the movie yet, we all recommend it. It's actually really good. If you're into Quentin Tarantino movies,
yes,
it is violent.
It
is
like
violent
it.
For a long time. And for a long time, I thought I wasn't watching a Quentin Tarantino movie because no one had died like violently. And then it got to the end of the movie. And I was like, oh, that's right. I am. Yeah, there we are.
If you haven't seen a Tarantino film, I probably wouldn't recommend this one as your first one. Your first rodeo.
I forgot that I was watching a movie.
It was like just a sketch show. No,
yeah.
I
just thought I was Big Brother.
Big Brother, Hollywood
Big
edition.
Big Brother in the 60s?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, just we're just watching people do menial tasks.
Yeah. Well, that's...
For money.
For money? Whoa. No.
What? Yeah, well, settle down.
That is, I guess. That's what's happening.
Acting. Dean means acting. Obviously.
Anyways, we're getting into the plot. So if you don't want to hear spoilers, jump out now. This is the time
jump
to
away.
Leave.
How
Where
does
do we
it
begin?
Start?
Where are we? We get introduced to Rick Dalton.
We do.
Is a former star of Bounty Law, and he's going through a bit of a slump because he's not really getting any of the roles that he used to get. He's getting like all the heavy of the week, as they call it, and which is not ideal. And he's got his friend who is his stunt double, Cliff Booth, who was a war veteran.
Yep.
And he lives in a caravan with his dog, which is kind of like a full Lethal Weapon, Martin Riggs style type
Riggs.
Kind of thing. Yeah, Riggs. And they're pretty much inseparable kind of thing because Rick needs Cliff to drive him everywhere pretty much because he got a DUI. Yeah, he had like a car crash or something. Was it a car crash?
Yeah, he crashed into a restaurant.
Yeah. Yeah. So
they open.
Yeah.
They open their meeting. They're going to a meeting
with Al Pacino.
They're going to meet Marvin Schwartz. Schwartz. Sorry, my apologies.
The Schwartz.
Played by
one.
Al Pacino, who still looks really threatening.
Oh yes.
Even though he's like he's actually way smaller than I thought. Like,
well, he's old. You know.
You don't actually shrink when you get old.
You absolutely do.
You like your back hunches a bit. You don't. Yeah. You don't shrink.
Exactly that.
You definitely hope not, would you, Jace?
You hunch. Okay. Yes. You hunch.
Yeah.
Maybe. And you shrink a little bit. But anyway, he's sort of saying he sort of levels with Rick, saying that you're getting old. You're getting a little bit less relevant. Yep. You should go and make spaghetti westerns in Rome.
So, yeah.
Rome's where it's at. You should do that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, Dalton's not super stoked.
He doesn't
about
like that at all.
No, he's not.
Mm-hmm. He's quite angry.
He's like yep, crying and everything.
Crying
he's
in front of the
Mexicans. He's having like a mental breakdown. Yeah, that's what he does say. Yes.
Don't cry in front of the Mexicans.
Don't cry in front of the Mexicans. So, you know, after this, they leave the meeting. They're not super happy. Cliff's driving Ricky home. In this scene, we get a weird little cross comparison where we see a bunch of kids, bunch of hippies, mm-hmm, rifling through the trash.
Yes.
That's right now, right? Yeah. Rifling through the trash, getting some pickles, some other random crap.
Yes.
Singing a song. It's eerie. And I guess looking back, if you know what's going on, this makes a lot of sense. But this is a prelude to the Charles Manson story beat that's going to happen in this movie.
And it is one of Charles Manson's songs, right, too? Like, right. Yeah.
They're
actually singing one of Charles Manson's songs. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. That makes
sense.
That's
pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does make sense.
It's one of those things where, like, in the moment, doesn't really have any significance. And you're like,
no,
what's the point of this? But we'll find out later what the point of
this
is.
That's right. Again, like this was purely like, this is things that I found out later. I didn't realize that. I learned a lot. I learned a lot reading about the movie.
I love that about this movie. That was like, there's so much packed in that it just seems so insignificant.
You've got to research it to truly understand how good it is.
See, like I didn't.
It's like the first time I watched.
I didn't know a lot of the Hollywood stuff in the movie, but I did know a lot of the Manson stuff, if that makes sense. So as soon as they rocked up, I was like, oh yeah, that's the family kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like I knew like straight away that they were like his followers and all that kind of stuff. I didn't know like little bits and pieces of like some of the details that he sort of explores in this, which I found way more interesting. And for me, I don't know how you guys feel, but when Brad Pitt, when Cliff goes out to the ranch, is that when the movie kicked off for you guys?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's when it started for me.
That's where it kind of like you start figuring out, oh, there's actually something important happening. There's actually a storyline happening here.
It's truly when it starts to become a little bit ominous.
Mm. Yes.
Yes.
And it becomes almost like a horror movie at that point, I think. Yeah.
Until then, you're just sort of following people doing stuff. Like you see Tate go and see herself in a movie. You see Rick on the set of Tanner, which is excellent.
Having a breakdown.
And Cliff was fixing an aerial.
Yeah, he's fixing an aerial and I have a flashback.
Having a flashback within a flashback? Yeah. Holy crap. Yeah.
Of him fighting Bruce Lee. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So freaking funny.
This little guy into the door.
But for me, like, because I knew a significant amount of the Charles Manson story because me and a mate of mine did a project way back.
A mate of mine and I.
Actually, okay, so here's the thing. So they were kind of like, for me, this was more like an education on top of my own education, because we did a historical documentary on Charles Manson. And the guy I did it with was, you know him, our mate Reese. So you can imagine what that documentary turned into.
I'm talking about
the Manson murders. And another thing, Charles Manson liked to skateboard in the wilderness with his pants off and all this stuff. And it was like, yeah, we filmed all that. It was quite funny.
Wait, you actually filmed that?
Yeah.
Reese played
Charles Manson. It was great.
Oh, okay.
I think he gets his pants on.
Dean?
Yeah?
Cut this if this isn't relevant, but is Reese a patron?
Reese, I'm giving you a massive shout out now. If you're not a Patreon, you better be.
Oh, if he's not, we're going to bleep it. Non-patrons don't get shouted out.
That's right. All right, I'll message him now. I was like, are you supporting us on Patreon?
Yeah, he better be by Sunday.
Jason's got a lot more editing work too.
Otherwise, I'm bringing out my beep.wav.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah. So this was more like me finding out what bits were true about Charles Manson and what bits Reese just made up. So
yeah, fair
enough. Lot of it was made up, apparently.
Yes. Yeah.
Anyway.
So moving on to Rick and Cliff. They head home, and moving into the house next door is Sharon Tate and her husband, Roman Polanski. So they're like their neighbors. Mm-hmm. And what happens next? What do they do?
Jason, you ask an excellent question. Mm. What does happen next?
So
who knows?
I believe
I just jump to the
at
farm.
At this point, Rick
I feel
Dalton,
like I want to just jump to the farm, but yeah.
Yeah. Rick Dalton starts practicing his lines for the night, for the day after.
He does too, yeah.
And Cliff goes back to his place. We get the whole moment with his dog. And
also
Tate
and Polanski.
We follow them to the Playboy Mansion for a party where you have
a
pervy Steve McQueen.
A wonderful cameo from a sus little Steve McQueen.
Yes.
That's
really good casting.
Yeah, I thought they did really well with him. Mm. I just couldn't I couldn't picture him as a Steve McQueen if I hadn't have seen this movie, right? Like there's no way I would have cast him as Steve McQueen, but then after seeing it, I'm like, he's perfect as Steve McQueen.
Totally
like
makes
he's
sense
so good.
As Steve McQueen, yeah.
And although he's a redhead, usually. So I was like, really, it's weird. Why that I don't know. I just don't know how someone envisioned that he'd be the perfect Steve McQueen, but he just works for some reason.
There is a photo that I found of Steve McQueen that looks exactly like, what's his name?
Damian Lewis.
One angle. There's like, wow, I can totally see it now.
Damian Lewis is ruined for me. It honestly does not matter which movie he appears in. As soon as I see his face, I'm like, oh, Sergeant Dick Winters. Band of Brothers.
Right.
Oh, Band of Brothers. I was like,
he's always going to be Sergeant Winters. I would just forever.
I am not a terrorist. That's all I think.
Yeah,
Homelander. Homeland.
Yeah, Homeland. Homelander.
I actually,
not Homelander. I've been watching The Boys.
Yeah.
I actually always go to what is it that Dreamcatcher, that terrible movie. You guys never seen it?
Dreamcatcher,
the Stephen King movie with Anyways,
Well, guess you should go to other movies.
Yeah,
have a look at the photo.
You should
I just
go
sent
to other
you guys.
Movies.
You should shut up.
What do you guys? Anyway, he does actually look a lot like him. I just like, never would have thought of him as that role. But, so he then explains that Jay and Sharon are sort of inseparable.
Yeah.
And Jay is her ex-boyfriend.
Ex-fiance.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, but they're like really good friends and he's still really good friends with Roman Polanski as well. And they're all sort of like a trio.
In the friend zone, apparently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He doesn't mind, which is good. Apparently. Yeah.
Hmm.
It's healthy. So,
the next day, Booth, Cliff is fixing the antenna in the house and he's reminiscing about fighting Bruce Lee and how he got kicked off the set because he wanted to get a role on the most recent movie that
on it.
What?
I love the setup for this.
He wanted to get a stuntman position on the most recent thing that Dalton is working on, which is Leonardo DiCaprio's character.
Yeah.
And
he makes this throwaway line where like, the guy doing all the stunts is mates with such and such.
It's and his cousin or his brother or something.
Yeah.
That whole thing was a flashback. So it's not worth it. That whole sequence was a flashback.
No.
Yeah.
That wasn't a flashback.
When he's on the roof and then it cuts to the lot, that is when Ricky was playing the
but
heavy.
But the setup's
for
not a
Hornet.
Flashback. The setup is
the setup
is
isn't a flashback.
When he drops Rick off at the shoot.
Yeah,
the show. And then he's like, oh, do you reckon I might get some work this week? And then Rick's like, oh, yeah.
My bad. Yeah, sorry.
Cousins with of such and such. So there's no point asking.
Yeah.
And the gaffer's good friend with some other stunt guy.
What? Yep. And then
and it's a massive setup for that joke that basically comes after the setup. So like, it's like, you know, like he says that line and then basically half an hour later, Brad Pitt's character goes, fair enough, kind of thing. Yeah. And that's it. Like that's
you
the
just,
whole,
you killed the joke.
The so whole story.
It's so funny. It is. Yeah. Cause he goes back and sees what happened with the fight with,
the
Bruce
wife
Lee.
As well. Yeah.
And and the reason why the wife, because then that's the flashback within the flashback, where you get onto the boat.
Oh, the wife
and see.
Flashback's so funny. So well, here's the question. So the issue surrounding Booth is that they don't, Kurt Russell playing one of the stunt coordinators doesn't want his on his team because he brings a weird energy to the set. And that energy is the fact that he killed his wife and got away with it.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And it's mainly because his wife, Kurt Russell's wife, doesn't like Booth at all.
And Kurt Russell's wife is played by... That. It was an accident. And it's like, well, that's not what my wife thinks. And then,
that's right. And that's right.
Kurt Russell's wife is played by Zoe Bell, from Death Proof and a lot Kill Bill. Kill Bill. She was a stunt woman for Uma Thurman and all that. Mm-hmm. So she's sort of Quentin Tarantino regular as well. So
she's the go-to Aussie.
But now she actually gets
a role. New Zealander, but yeah.
Go to Kiwi.
Go to Kiwi. Unofficial state. Unofficial state.
Whoa.
Yeah. Okay. you just
shout out to
offended
all
a whole country there.
There,
but yeah.
Yeah. It was our country, mate.
Yeah. Our country. Yeah, you offended our country. That's what you did.
Oh, that's fine. We can leave it in.
Yeah. So Cliff in the flashback, he has the fight with Bruce Lee, and Bruce Lee has a nice little moment of like a monologue that's pretty well written and actually
really
pretty well acted as well. Like the guy that plays Bruce Lee is pretty good.
Bruce Lee.
Yeah, don't say that.
Oh, man. I just love
blew me away about this bit was that it was it was the longest one shot.
Oh, yeah.
There was
true.
A lot of one shots in this, but this was a long one.
But there was a massive continuity issue. Did you guys pick it?
Jason, I'll be honest, I was looking at my phone a lot.
Yeah,
this movie,
okay, so in this fight scene, they start fighting when there's like a group of people around them watching them, right? The group disappears, like literally all the people that are circling them disappear in the fight.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Did you notice that?
They ran away.
Now that
cut and they're gone.
They're totally gone at the end of it. You're right. Yeah. I didn't notice that.
And I was like, and there was a few things in this movie. Like I know that they're doing a few editing choices where they're like they're jump frames and jump cutting and all that kind of stuff. But then there was a few times in the movie where there were continuity issues like that. And I was like, are they doing it intentional? Because it is so over the top kind of thing. It's not like one of those things where
it's gotta be intentional.
You know, an accident or something like that. But I was like, is he just playing with the idea that that it's a memory? So the memory is kind of a little bit incomplete kind of thing. But I wasn't sure what the intention was behind it.
That
kind of
makes sense.
It does make sense.
It's
from
Brad Pitt's perspective, we're getting this story. And so the whole start is like, it's Bruce Lee trying to impress a bunch of an audience kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so then obviously that part sticks in Brad Pitt's memory because he's calling Bruce Lee out in front of a crowd. But then the end of the fight, it's him getting fired. It's this a lot more what's the word? He's a lot more vulnerable. He's in it's the one-on-one kind of confrontation with the boss. And it's suddenly, if you think if you're in a confrontation
it's not you and a whole heap of people. It's just you.
You're in that moment with that one or two people that are having that conversation with you. And so it's nothing else kind of matters. Yeah, yeah. It's like, oh, that's
maybe that's what he was doing. Like, I like to think that was intentional, but then sometimes I go, did they just get lazy? Like, they just like send a bunch of people home?
Could have been.
And just be like, let's just finish the fight without the
could have been a
around.
Union thing. Exactly.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
But post, yeah. post the fight, it then hard cuts all the way back to Booth
after,
on the roof.
Yeah. After
fixing
the
Booth on the roof. That's Booth the name the of his kid's
fair
novel.
Enough.
It's the name of his aerial repair company.
Yeah, Booth on a roof.
Booth on a roof.
But whilst this is happening, the neighbor, Sharon Tate, is getting ready for her trip to Rome, I think. I think Woo. In real life she was heading to Rome at this point, but I don't know
there
where
you go.
Let's just say Rome. And then a really sus looking hippie rocks up and starts asking around for the previous owners, to which who was her friend? What was her friend's name again? Jay. Jay's there and he sort of says, no, nah, they're not here anymore. You know, rack off kind of deal.
Because the previous this is owners obviously- were actually friends of Manson's in real life. This interaction actually did happen.
It did
and,
happen.
Some of the, from what I've sort of gathered in that, the interaction is kind of a lot more intense in the reality because they were kind of rude to him. And
they
I
were
think-
rude to him.
Yeah.
Oh, but then also they were telling him to go and like check the guest house as well. Like that might be where your friend is, blah, blah, blah. So he was on the property for a lot longer in reality than he was in the movie.
Mm.
And some of the things like is because he had that interaction, there's some people that sort of wonder if that's why he targeted their house kind of thing later on, like in reality, but
because of them being rude in that one point.
Yeah.
They kind of play on that kind of idea of a rude confrontation later on.
They
down
do.
The track as
they
well.
Mm-hmm. Just a little bit.
Different. Yeah, it's just a little bit. Yeah. Just a little
fix
bit.
Your muffler.
Yeah. So we continue on and as you were saying before, there was like the followers of Manson that have been walking through the streets and there's a continuing theme of Booth driving past one girl that is hitchhiking.
Another interaction.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he continually drives past her and she's trying to hitchhike and she's sort of flirty with him and everything like that. And eventually he does pick her up later on. But, I believe that we go to the set next, right? For Dalton.
Yes.
Where we have, some great cameos.
I freaking love everything on this set is just gold. I think every interaction that happens, all the stuff with the kid. With
the kid's
girl,
amazing.
Just, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Like she, and what an excellent young actress she is as well.
Yeah, she's pretty good.
So talented.
She reminds me of the, it's Hayley Steinfeld.
Steinfeld, yes. Steinfeld? Yeah.
Yeah, from.
It's very
from,
much like what she used to be.
Yeah.
True Grit.
Yeah.
From what?
True Grit. Yeah. Yeah.
So
it
Hayley
reminds
Steinfeld,
me of when she
was
in
also
that.
In
yeah.
Bumblebee.
Yes.
The girl from Bumblebee, yeah.
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 Because I was like, oh, the girl from True Grit. But then I realized that that girl has grown up and she's actually in like bigger movies kind of thing.
So maybe it's Hayley Steinfeld's younger sister.
Maybe.
Or maybe it's just maybe there might be more than one good young actress.
There might be, but I feel like with Quentin Tarantino, nepotism is alive and well. So, yeah, maybe it is. Maybe it isn't.
Very true.
So, because with everyone that's in these movies, they're all like friends or relations or whatever.
Daughters
like
of even, friends.
Yeah, or daughters of like Uma Thurman's daughter appears later on from Stranger Things.
Yeah,
and,
that was cool.
Yeah,
such
that was
a good cameo.
Cool.
Yeah.
I wish she was in it more, but that's fine.
Maya Hawke.
I wish she was in it more too, but there's a lot of cameos in this. Like I feel like every scene has at least like three cameos.
Yeah.
But
it's kind of funny. So, like Maya Hawke, no one would have known who she was if this came out before Stranger Things season 3.
I mean, her parents might have.
Two people might have known who she was.
Family and
Paul,
friends.
Paul. Mm-hmm. Dean said no one. So that means no one.
that means
they wouldn't have known either. They would have been like, who is this girl in Quentin Tarantino's movie?
Watching this movie?
She looks familiar.
She reminds me of someone.
Who is this chick and why do we give her a screen moment?
Yeah.
Oh, my freaking God. You know what I meant. As in, it's yeah, we she's know what you like mean. Kind of overnight due to Stranger Things, her role in this has become a cameo. Before then, it was kind of just like a bit part and one of her first roles. Yeah. That's what I was saying.
Was it anyway, one of her first roles, though? She was in smaller stuff before, wasn't she?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, fair enough.
Hardly anything.
Not a lot of things. Yeah, yeah. No. Fair enough.
Yeah.
But anyways, so we're on the set. Kurt Russell is directing, or he's a producer?
Kurt Russell's a stunt coordinator.
He's a stunt coordinator, yeah.
Are you sure? Because it's his voice off, like, outside the camera, right?
It is. But he's also the stunt coordinator.
Is it? Is it his voice?
Yes. He's directing, right?
It's his voice. Yes, it's Kurt Russell's voice. And yes, he is the stunt coordinator.
Okay.
So he's like multitasking.
These are things that I have read, yes.
Right. Yeah. There you go.
Cool.
Fair enough.
So does that mean he is directing this show or?
No. He's directing the stunts.
The old dude with the sweater vest is.
Yeah, they're really sus.
Oh, that's the director. Yeah, that's right. That's the director. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the director.
I always thought, like, yeah. Anyways,
I wanted to be wearing a hippie jacket. Okay.
Hippie jacket.
That's right. He
give him long hair.
Yeah.
So, so he has him like really decked out in like the classic sort of bad guy, sort of dirty, sort of gruff kind of uniform. And they're going through the scene and it's quite some really long takes in the scene. But then he starts to forget lines and have to ad lib and he's yelling off screen like line. He's really embarrassed. And he has a moment of like breakdown
in his trailer. Do you reckon this whole moment was completely improvised? Like Tarantino's like, well, look,
apparently it was. Yeah.
Yeah.
And apparently this is the only thing that was improvised was the trailer scene. And even I think it was something about the asking for the line was actually improvised as well. But yeah. Yeah.
And everything else was fully scripted.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Apparently. Man. Apparently. According to IMDb or something that I read. I came across that when I was doing some research for this. But
yeah, okay.
But yeah, so
so good. Anyway.
Yeah, I was like, are you doing that to me right now? But I completely forgot that's what he actually did in the movie. I was like, okay.
I'll stop
drinking. Stop up your lines. You look like a fucking moron.
You're going to stop drinking. You're drunk every night. And then he pulls out the hip flask. He's like, what are you doing?
He's looking in the mirror. He's like, if you don't get your lines right, I will
blow
kill
your
you.
Head off.
It is a very funny scene, actually. He's on the set of Lanta where Timothy Oliphant is the main lead role kind of thing on the show. So he's basically he's what they call the heavy for the week, like we were saying before. He's the bad guy of the week.
Big
that's
villain.
Gonna pretty much die by the end of it. But I was surprised that we didn't have a scene where his character died on set kind of thing, like something like that in this movie. I thought that would be for sure something that they'd cover, like, you know, his demise.
Well, he didn't die until like the mid 70s, the character that Oliphant was playing. Well, he didn't die at all.
No.
You're talking about Leo's character.
I'm talking about Leonardo's character, like on set.
Or actually, kind of you're thing, talking like about Cliff Booth's character in.
Nah, Rick Dalton's character, probably.
No, I'm talking about Rick Dalton.
Rick Dalton. Thank you.
I'm talking about Rick Dalton.
Rick Dalton's character.
On set, like kind of thing,
as
like
a
because like they go on about how he's like, you know, the
big
heavy
bad
for the week, and he's the big bad for the week, but you never actually see him die on any of those shows or anything like that. And I thought that was just an interesting choice because it just seems like the cliche almost that he would have a death scene kind of thing, but he doesn't.
But instead, they decide to end that whole scene, that whole moment with. Basically, this feeling that he's getting this return to form, having the standout performance moment on the whole set. Yeah. And I feel like that's probably what they're trying to get is like, this is the start of his comeback kind of thing. Like he's getting his mojo back kind of thing.
Yeah.
I guess for sure. He's understanding what he is and he's accepting that.
So he
he's accepting his place and not going, okay, this is the end of it. It's just a different step
it's a new season.
In my career.
That's it.
Yeah. Yeah, for exactly. sure.
And he can do great things with what he has still. That's what, yeah.
Yeah.
And man, yeah. it was so good. And that was a great scene that he was playing. That was like, yeah, he was yeah. playing really someone well. Playing
I,
another character.
I really, like, I liked it because I feel like in a lot of ways, Leonardo DiCaprio is a better actor than what Rick Dalton is, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because he's so, like, because I mean, like, I've seen him in heaps of movies, so you know, like, he's capable of doing a lot of things, but a lot of the stuff that he does in this movie is kind of like semi over the top, but also subdued in a way of not being accurately acted, if that makes some sort of sense, kind of right. thing. Like, so it's like, it's not good acting.
Yeah. He's intentionally,
yeah,
like making, you know, mistakes in his performance.
And yeah. Yeah. But it's yeah, not, wrong. It's not terrible acting, but it's not great acting at no. the same time.
It feels
time.
Like, sort of like if you ever go back and watch like old Westerns,
yeah, he it's very
is
accurate
acting
to those.
Like you would.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
what they would consider back in the time as amazing acting. Mm-hmm. He's doing that. Yeah, except yeah. for that one scene where he's threatening the little girl, where he then actually is acting very good.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I guess really it is like, it is a great performance because he is perfectly performing
yeah.
a failing actor that's putting on a less than perfect performance.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And that's what I felt like. But yeah. even in that scene, I think it's subdued because if you go to Django Unchained, when he has mm-hmm. a very similar scene in mm-hmm. that movie where he's threatening the Jamie Foxx and Christoph Waltz's character.
When he cuts his hand open?
Yeah, when he cuts his hand open.
Holy crap.
That is like so intense and just like crazy level. Whereas he's doing the same sort of thing here, but it's not to that level and it's not.
Yeah, right.
It's subdued, if it makes sense. Like, because it definitely is brought back a level to that extent. Like, and you're always aware that he's acting, if that, like. Yeah, and I think it's really well done, like really well done that scene.
It's a bit of a parody on himself in a lot of ways.
Yeah, almost. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah, yeah,
almost a self parody.
That's
really
right.
So, meanwhile, Booth's driving around and he sees the hitchhiker again, and he realizes that
Pussycat,
you know, he's got a bit of time or whatever, and he decides to actually give her a lift, and she says that she's going out to.
Spawn Ranch.
Yeah. What's the name of the ranch?
Spawn Ranch.
Spawn Ranch.
Spawn Ranch. Yeah. So where he's been there in the past, like it's been a few years since he's been there, but he knows the guy that owned it. And he's like, well, you know, I wouldn't mind going out that way. So he takes it out. And when he gets there, realizes that all these hippies are living.
So many hippies, man.
Yeah, like everywhere. they're all in the ranch. And he's a little bit concerned that the owner might be being taken advantage of. So he wants to actually go and see the owner, but they're all there kind of thing. So he decides that.
It's really eerie. Kind of like it feels there's very much elements of like Western in the way that it's being shot, but it's also like
you've
got a bit of a Hitchcock kind of thriller thing happening at this point as well.
Yeah,
kind of like
it's even the bits.
Yeah,
like you hit the nail on the head with it feeling like a Western, like when either the villain or the good guy walks into town and everyone's watching from the sort
for
them to and sort of throw
all,
down,
and they all sort of come out of their like little huts kind of thing, and they're all watching, like they're everywhere, and because also if you know a little bit about the whole family and Manson, you obviously know what they're capable of.
Yeah.
And
yes.
knowing that Booth is a fictional character in this world.
Fully expected
I was like,
to die.
Okay,
in this moment.
He's probably going to die here.
Yep.
And that's when the movie really picked up. And I was and what Quentin Tarantino is doing is he's basically got these choices that he gets to make. Booth as a character, it's like he either goes and sees if the guy's okay or he stands down, and everything is getting more and more obstacles as more and more people come out. He gets more and more intense because everyone's like, hey, you know, you can't go and see him, or they're making up what seems like really crazy excuses as to why. and the closer and closer he gets.
Obviously dead.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. And yeah. even when you get to seeing where the guy's lying on the bed and you fully like, I know what's going to happen next. I know what he's going to do. He's going to roll over a corpse. And it's going to be like,
it's going to be psycho.
Then it's just going to be psycho and people are going to just like out of everywhere. It's going to just be like killing him. Yeah. Yep. I was like,
but
really?
That's not what happened.
Yeah.
That is definitely not what happens.
No, that is not what happens. But that's what I thought would happen.
So I can watch the TV show with my wife.
Yeah. Yes.
That's right.
Which
I love the bit where he says, yeah, with the wife. It's like, oh, you mean the redhead? It's like, are you freaking kidding me?
Did you forget that I just said I'm blind?
So it's a great, great cameo by Bruce Dern. Man. And I feel like every movie deserves a nice injection of Bruce Dern in it.
Mm-hmm.
He's a great actor. And just really like picks up the pace. Good. When he's sort of rolls over and he's like, what the hell do you want? And
I don't know who you are.
His character.
But thank you.
Yeah.
That's right.
So great.
Yes.
Now get out.
He is great. And so obviously he's not dead, the owner of the ranch. He is letting them stay there. And it's mainly because Charlie Manson's sort of blackmailing him with women and anything he wants kind
of thing.
And
Dakota Fanning.
And Dakota Fanning. Yeah.
I did not know that was Dakota Fanning when I saw this movie.
I didn't recognize her at all.
Yes, it is Dakota Fanning. She's playing a real person.
A real person.
Yes.
Well, she is a real person.
Real.
No, but Squeaky is the actual name of the person that was the person that was the lover of the old person that lived.
Well,
and
there you go.
That ranch in reality.
That was all legit. Well, there
it
you
was
go.
All based on the real family. That's, kind of thing.
Wow.
And yeah. And apparently she was actually quite fond of him as a, yeah, yeah.
And
so
she's actually still alive, I think, isn't she?
Oh, she probably is. Yeah.
And
yeah,
out of prison.
I don't know. Did they all go to prison? Because I thought
three,
it was only sort
three
of
the
ones
girls
that
did.
Went to.
Or the four, like, I think.
Yeah.
And I think they all had life sentences, but then this one, I think, got out recently.
But Squeaky wasn't involved in the actual murders, was she?
Yes.
She was? Was Dakota Fanning wasn't in the last scene?
Dakota
scenes?
Fanning, yeah. Because it's like, I don't remember you, but I remember that red hair. Like, that whole thing.
Yeah, wasn't well, she? She's not in it, though. They mention her.
Yeah,
that
he
wasn't
doesn't
her
no,
in
he,
the last
he
scene?
Goes.
No, she's not there.
No,
there's
no,
another.
She's
it's
not
another
there.
Ginger.
It's another ginger.
Yeah, it's someone else.
Yeah,
he says, I don't remember you, but I remember. Like he says that about the other guy, basically that rode up, kind of thing, and he says, yeah, I remember the red hair kind of thing of Dakota Fanning, but that is sort of him alluding to remembering him getting on a horse, right? Did he seen him get on a horse when he was leaving the ranch? Because that guy that comes at the end, right?
Tex comes back.
Tex is actually the guy that rode up to meet Cliff before he goes in the house.
Yes.
Well, there you go.
And then he rides off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought she was there at the end. But there you go.
I don't think so.
She's not. I promise you she's not.
Yeah. But yeah.
Do you pinky promise?
Anyways.
I pinky promise.
Okay.
I do.
Well, then that's good enough for me.
Yeah.
That's good enough for me.
You're gonna have to re-edit the movie if it comes out and you're wrong.
Oh, man.
That's what a pinky promise means.
That is it. That's
change
it.
The past.
I'd like to do one of those, like, taking it to, it's like a Big Wick Energy version of this movie.
Hey, Dean, I brought you a gift. It's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Don't watch any other version. Just this one that I'm giving you now.
Yeah, you don't need to watch
a Big Wick Energy. You should watch this one.
No.
Man.
So, yeah. So, Cliff, he sort of leaves the house with the old man, and as he gets to his car, he realizes that someone stabbed his tire, and It's got like a massive knife sticking out the edge of it. And he looks across and he sees Clem has slashed his tire. So Booth just, you know, casually beats the crap out of him until
smacks him right in the gob.
Yeah. Until he agrees to actually fix it. And meanwhile, one of the girls runs up and gets Tex, who's showing some people around on horseback. And he's like, hey, the guy down there is beating up Clem. So Tex rides down and you think, like, again, you think maybe Booth hasn't got out of this alive kind of thing. There's a good chance that he'll probably still die, even though he's on his way out. So at this point, he gets to where the car was, and we hear it driving down the driveway sort of thing, and he's out for it kind of thing. And I actually, at that point, I actually breathed a sigh of relief because I was like, I did not want Cliff to die.
He is. I feel like Brad Pitt is the standout for me in this movie. Like,
DiCaprio
and Margot Robbie do fantastic jobs, but Brad Pitt just steals every scene he's in. And so, for him to be killed off here, it would have been like, spoilers, but Burn After Reading, a similar situation.
Yeah.
When Brad Pitt
thinking,
gets offed and it's like,
and I think this is the benefit of, knowing the history of Quentin Tarantino movies. Again, spoilers for Django Unchained, but it could have been Christoph Waltz's character kind of thing. In this movie, like, he could have been the one that died and just, you know, like, it was never seen again sort of thing. And I was like, well, this could go anyway. And I didn't, like, I'm glad it went the way that it did.
It's well kind done, of, Tarantino.
Yeah.
Your decisions spot on.
For sure.
If anything, that should have been, not to give anything away for the later part of the movie, but that could have been a really good indication as to the direction that this movie was going to go.
Yeah.
Like, it was going to be that once upon a time fairy tale ending, but
yes, yeah,
you're not to know. It could so easily be a double fake.
Yeah,
yeah, oh, this completely.
Is true.
Yeah,
this is true.
Completely. That's so where do we go next?
We jump onto. Oh, I'm going to rephrase that. We jump back to Sharon Tate, and she
she's watching her own movie, isn't she?
That's she's watching her own movie,
the Wrecking Crew, and I thought it was an interesting choice to not digitally alter the film to have Margot Robbie play Sharon Tate in the movie, but just have the real life Sharon Tate on screen. And
I should have gotten Hilary Duff.
Yeah. What?
What?
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah.
Do you not?
Sure. Sure.
Have you seen the movie that she's in?
Hilary Duff.
She's in a movie called The Haunting of Sharon Tate.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. No way.
It's as good as you think it is.
Oh, apparently. Fantastic.
Basically, she's like, she plays Sharon Tate, but she keeps getting premonitions of her death and she's haunted by that.
Oh, that sounds terrible.
We should have done that as a prelude to this movie.
No,
that's our retrospective.
That is so bad.
8% on Metacritic, 18% Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, wow. I'm surprised it's got that
stars
much.
On
that's
IMDb.
Terrible.
That's good. That sounds fantastic. Let's review that.
So, at this point, where are we? She says she's watching herself in the Wrecking Crew, and I thought it was really weird that they didn't actually have, like, Margot Robbie in the footage, because they did it with Leonardo DiCaprio in the
The
Great Escape. They cast him like they did like a dream
recasting
sort of sequence where he's like, he actually got the Steve McQueen part kind of thing because he was, you know, in line or whatever. There's a whole thing about it, and they've actually put him into the film. And I thought, why didn't they do that with Margot Robbie? I get that it would have been very expensive, but then
I think it's
such
also
a weird
that,
choice.
Yeah. Well, that, with the recasting thing, like, that was, he wasn't playing Steve McQueen in.
That's true. That. Yeah.
He's
he was playing Rick Dalton.
Yeah. It could have been one of those, like, just a respect thing as well. That was like, look, we're not going to go and replace her, one of her very few roles she did. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's a,
I know what you mean. It is a little bit off-putting when it's like, that's clearly not her. up on
screen. It's a weird choice, but it's kind of like a fourth wall breaking sort of moment. And I think, I mean, a lot of this movie is a fourth wall break. Like the pretty much the whole thing is. And that's why I think it does kind of work.
I don't know how he does it, but it works. It's fine. You just kind of roll with it. And I guess it's not really on screen for that long.
No.
And I feel one with Great Escape is like its own scene. So it has to look semi mint.
Yeah, that's true. But so she watches herself, and it's sort of the way that they're painting her character is sort of this whimsical sort of
klutz.
No, in the movie she's a klutz, but I think as Sharon Tate as a character is kind of they paint her as this sort of like just this real sweet and innocent girl that's going through the world and enjoying sort of life
she's
and everything. And I think
idealistic image of Hollywood and opportunity that Hollywood is like this girl that's just rocketed up to fame and is just loving life and excited about her own career.
She's just stoked. Yeah. She always seems happy this whole movie, except for the bit where she's like pregnant and it's hot. But that's just general discomfort.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hate being pregnant when it's hot.
So after this, there's a whole sort of, is it a montage, I suppose, where Rick and Cliff decide that it's going to be in their best interest to actually go over to
Spaghetti Westerns.
And do Spaghetti Westerns. And
so it's a bit of a time jump.
And so, they have a whole time jump. It's about 6 months time jump. So it gets us closer to the August 9th date. And
six
so.
6 months. Holy. Because he shoots like 3 movies in that time, doesn't he?
Yes. Which is pretty decent. Yeah.
That's a good effort.
I mean, it's not like they've got to do post on it.
Well, that's it. Yeah, I mean, like, it's just the acting. So they're just going to arrive for their 20 days or whatever.
You're right.
And shoot that and then fly out or whatever.
It's actually, not impressive at all. It's kind of like disappointing.
Why did he only do 3?
Yeah.
Exactly.
10 at least. Seriously.
Yeah, at least. So after this time, he actually, while he's over in Europe, he actually gets married to Francesca Capucci? Yeah. Francesca. Let's just get with Francesca.
Capucci.
Francesca.
And they return to LA. And as they're coming back, Dalton had informed Booth that he can't afford him anymore. So he's they've agreed to basically go their separate ways but they're gonna have one night.
Yeah,
they're basically breaking up. And they're both pretty upset about it, but that's sort of what they think is best. So they decide to have one last night out.
One last hoorah.
They're gonna go on a bender.
So which happens to be August 9th. So they go out. Why is that important? Because
why
I
is
don't
that
know.
Important? We'll find out.
We'll find out. So they go out and they have like a massive night out, and they come home, like just stumble home kind of drunk and everything. And Booth decides to take his dog for a walk.
Oh yeah. Yep. No, Bill, there's, and, well, oh, yeah. There's a scene because earlier,
the cigarette,
six months earlier, there's another random throwaway scene where Booth is just deciding that, hey, I'm going to buy an acid tipped cigarette. And
that's right.
We'll see what happens there. You're like,
so
okay,
he decides that he's going to smoke that one this night, and he's going to go for a walk with his dog.
It is the Chekhov's gun of the movie, apparently.
Yes, basically. So he smokes that, and meanwhile, 4 of the family, which, as we were saying before, we have what's the name? I can't.
Maya Hawke?
Can't do it.
Maya Hawke,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Maya Hawke, and we have the guy who plays Tex. I don't know who.
Tex. What is called Tex?
And
they should have gone. It would have been amazing if Tex was played by Kylo Ren.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, he would have been really good.
Because he kind of played that in that movie, in that heist movie that he was in with Daniel Craig.
Yes.
Yeah, yes. He was sort of playing like that
that's
dummy cowboy character.
True. Oh, that, Lucky that Logan? Is actually pretty. Yeah, Lucky Logan.
Yeah.
That is a great movie. I reckon that's like good? The Hillbilly Ocean's 11. It's so good.
That's probably
it
is so hearing. Good.
Oh, yeah, 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 for sure. But yeah, yeah. So like they're all there and they're all going up and deciding that they're going to go on a murder spree and Adam they're Driver. Heading up to the Adam Driver.
How
yeah.
Did we forget Thank that you.
Him. Yeah. I don't know why we didn't think of him. I mean, it's Kylo Ren. so they're heading up to go on this murder spree and Maya Hawke's character is having a little bit of,
a little bit of
hesitation. Like she's not really that keen. So, yeah, So Booth walks past the car as they're driving up the street with while he's walking the dog. And then the car is pretty beat up and it's making a lot of noise. And a drunken Rick Dalton comes out after making a martini. He comes out with martini in hand, margarita. Like the blender. Oh, margarita. Sorry. Yeah.
There's a difference, man.
I know there is. I know. It's late. Yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah, so
and
he's
comes
got
out
a
in the most emasculating robe ever.
Yes,
that's so completely. Funny.
And,
it is hilarious.
And he's just
such an old man,
giving him a what for kind of thing, like going
get
off.
Get out of here!
Yeah, and he's like, telling him get out of there. And Tex is in the front seat with his gun ready to draw it, but at the last minute he doesn't. Why doesn't he pull the gun?
Because they're terrified of him. They're like, obviously, there's been a lot of talk of, you know, killing and importance of murder and all that on the back on the ranch. But I don't think at this point anyone has actually killed anyone yet.
Yeah, that's right.
And so like, and this is probably like the first time where they've actually been confronted by somebody, by a Hollywood elite. And they're young, they're kids still. They have no idea, like an old man is yelling at them.
Yeah.
It can be pretty intimidating. But
they back out of the driveway or like out of the street sort of thing and drive down the road and decide to park the car and actually walk up kind of thing.
Oh, so this is where Maya Hawke leaves, by the way.
Yes, this is where Maya Hawke, so she walks up and says
how they should kill their Rick Dalton and their childhood icons instead of who they were sent to kill.
Well, they say that they should kill the people that are actors and
that have taught them to kill.
And I kind of felt like this was almost like Quentin Tarantino's sort of, you know, like a little bit of a...
It's a self-parody, isn't it? Yeah.
Well, it's a shot across the bow for anyone that sort of criticizes him for having like violent movies kind of thing. It kind of like, you know, like it's like screw
That's
you kind
totally
of
true.
Thing.
This is your excuse. Like this is you know, like you're accusing me of making your kids violent. Now this is like what that actually looks like. See how ridiculous that is and how that's not my fault. That's your, that is your insane kids.
Well,
yeah. And so they're walking up and Mayor Hawke is like, oh, I need to get something. I left something in the car.
I left my knife in the car.
Or knife, yeah. And so she goes back to the car and just takes off. And the guys are like, oh, well, let's just keep doing what we're here for kind of thing. Let's go and kill some people. So meanwhile, Rick Dalton's, he's sort of moved his party, his own little private party out to the pool and, he's having his margarita and listening to some headphones on like an old school Walkman sort of thing. Yep. And his wife has gone to bed.
That's right. And, get lagged.
Yep. And I can't remember. Does Cliff come back first?
Cliff comes is back already. He's acided up and he's getting dinner for the dog.
Yes.
Turns out the only thing better than Brad Pitt's character in this movie is Brad Pitt's character on a mad acid trip.
Brad Pitt's character on an acid trip is hilarious. Like everyone is like so moving his arm around. He's like, I'm coming. Whoa.
Yeah.
So whilst he's getting dinner ready for Daisy, Is that the dog?
Yeah.
What's the dog's
and
name?
And laughing and like just amazed.
Let's go with
at
Daisy.
He's having a great time.
Good. Yeah, he's having they such a good
send,
time.
They send one of the Manson family around the back and mm-hmm. basically all three of them. At this point, he's alerted because the dog is sort of barking and
yes.
is acting erratic. So this is sort of triggering his cowboy senses. But yeah. at this point, all three of them burst into the room. Tex right in front of him with a gun. They sort of have a little bit of a chit chat, and he's sort of not sure if they're real or not.
Yes.
And at this point, Tarantino starts to flex. This is where he returns.
This is where I was fully reminded that I'm watching a Quentin Tarantino movie.
So gratuitous.
I love the standoff beforehand, or just like. That he's like got the gun pointing at him and he's like puts his fingers up and points like
I love that shit. I would love that as a wallpaper.
I was waiting for him to like die again. I was waiting for them to like shoot off his fingers kind of thing.
Yeah.
In like a really brutal kind of way. I'm glad it didn't happen.
One of the funniest funniest interactions ever. Like I love the interactions in this moment. It's like I remember you. I remember you. You're on a horse. You had some stupid name. What was it? It's like I'm the devil.
Like a Hit Rex. A
devil's work. It's like no, it was way stupider than that.
No, it was dumber than that. Yeah. Like Rex or something.
It's so good.
Yeah.
And then one of the guys like, "What are we gonna do, Tex? Tex?
Tex? That's it." Yeah.
And so then they have their full-on final fight and Cliff
dogs mauling people.
Yeah.
One of the chicks gets smashed in the face with a can, but not in a funny way. It's like she gets hit with the edge of the can and it like blows her nose open.
Yes.
Her nose gets like then, crushed into her face. Sounds gross.
It's so brutal.
It is really gross.
Head slamming the redhead one.
It's even grosser than what I'm saying. Yeah.
Yeah.
It just gets so gratuitous. Like two head slams would have been enough, but he just continues for maybe another eight.
Like pulp.
How does he?
Gone.
How does he kill the guy? No, that's all right. The first thing he does is he sets his dog on the dude, doesn't he?
The dog hits Tex and starts biting him on the arm and then on the balls. He kicks the can at the dark haired girl.
Yes. And then she's screaming around.
Yeah, and the other one is attacked by the wife who hits her or whatever. And then they have the whole sort of showdown kind of thing. He takes out two of them.
He kills two of them.
And the wife runs back to a room.
Yes,
and then the last one falls through the window. The red one falls through the window.
Yeah, well, yes.
And that's what gets Booth Rick gets, Dalton.
Booth First gets of all, stabbed in the leg and he passes does. Out from blood loss. And then
the redhead.
The redhead bursts through the window. She's now covered in glass. This freaks Dalton out, who's just having a great time, slightly drunk in his pool. Yeah. She is in the pool, flailing and screaming. He gets out, but instead of running into the house, he runs into the shed, and he comes out with a flamethrower.
This is nice.
Bucolic?
Yeah, it was from one of his previous movies.
And just toasts her.
And just torches her.
Torches her in the pool.
Which I kept thinking, why isn't she just going under the water in this scene?
I thought that too.
You're in water. You're in like the perfect
at
place.
At this point, her face is so crushed up that she can't actually see what's going on. So she has no idea.
I get it. I just think it's kind of hilarious at the same time.
It's brutal and hilarious and gross and just
it's
so
excessive.
Over the top. It is.
So the police come and they clear up the scene and they tell them exactly what's happened and Booth gets taken away in an ambulance.
Yep.
And Rick is like at the end of his driveway, actually at the end of Roman Polanski's and Sharon Tate's driveway.
Yes.
And Jay comes down, who's like the best friend of Sharon Tate.
Because Polanski's away.
Yeah, because Polanski was away in reality as well. And so Jay comes down and he asks Rick what happened. And basically Rick tells him the whole story. And this is one of my favorite parts in the whole movie.
Yeah.
Is when you hear Sharon Tate, her voice comes through like the intercom system on the opening to the driveway. And she's like, oh, what happened kind of thing. And he's telling the story, recounting it all. And it's just sort of super innocent. But when you know the reality of what actually happened.
Yeah.
They just saved all their lives.
Yeah. It's kind of like in a Hollywood sort of rewriting history kind of way. It's beautiful, but also really sad kind of thing. If that makes sense.
It's like a, this is what it could have been kind of moment.
Yeah.
Yes.
And through that, you're like, oh, that's lovely, but why couldn't it have just been that?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And you kind of like go, okay, I get what he's doing here. And I get why Sharon Tate's sister would have been on board for this. Cause it's almost like a love letter to her character.
Absolutely.
And I know that there was like an interview like months back at Cannes Film Festival.
The
reporter was like, yeah, like, are you worried that you don't have enough lines or something like that to Margot Robbie or said it about to Quentin Tarantino? And he had that whole, I reject your hypothesis or whatever. Yeah. And that whole moment. And I thought, oh, what a jerk at the time when I'd seen it, but I hadn't seen the movie.
Yeah.
And I just thought that of Quentin Tarantino. But after seeing the movie, I'm like, that reporter, like the Chante has heaps of lines in this. Yeah. What is like he even talking so about?
It's the equivalent of Tom Hardy getting angry at the director of Mad Max and then being like, it was good.
My whole thing was that obviously she's playing, like back then I was like, she's playing Sharon Tate. She's going to be an integral part of the story. Has it ever been written that the amount of lines you have determines how important your role is? Like, I'm pretty sure if you talk to Arnold Schwarzenegger on the set of Terminator, you find that.
Well, that even like what in Mad Max 2, he has something like 12 lines of dialogue. He has the least amount of lines, and that's why in Fury Road he has like hardly any.
It's that
like
reporter maybe five was fishing. Words. That's all she was doing. She was fishing.
And that's where I was like, what are they even talking about? Like in general, like, cause I didn't notice that there was like a massive difference between how many lines Sharon Tate had and everyone else, to be honest, because I didn't pick up on that. I was expecting her to have a lot less, but
I thought it was pretty ballsy for somebody to go at, try to like paint Tarantino of all directors as a sexist bigot kind of thing. Like anything, like the guy gave you Kill Bill and all these extremely strong women characters like in Death Proof and all that. To make him out to be a sexist guy, like that's not going to fly. And I thought he gave us
a lot of feet though.
You can give him a foot fetish. There's definitely justification for that one.
Bad. It's probably the worst one is when Booth's driving along in the car. I was like, it was actually kind of, I was like, you know, on the big screen, you've got these feet right in front of you. And no disrespect to the actress at all. Like, I mean, like, she's got fine feet, but that is just disgusting.
It's filth.
Like,
man.
It's really gross. Oh,
like, as a car guy, I'm like, get your damn feet off the windscreen.
Yeah.
Rude is what it is.
That was disrespectful to the car.
It's disrespectful to the car. Yeah. It's a lovely car. So there was a really cool sort of summary that I read about this. Mm. So, like, when he realizes that, when Dalton realizes his neighbors, Sharon Tate and Roman Polanski, he sees it as a sign of really good fortune because he's like, you know, I'm one pool party away from being back in the game.
Mm.
And he kind of gets that wish at the end of the movie when he gets invited up and he meets Sharon Tate and that whole crew. And the funny thing is, someone was saying it felt a little bit like Rick Dalton didn't do anything basically and gets the rewards that he want. Whereas Cliff Booth, the stuntman, does all the work and gets hauled away in an ambulance. And the summary is kind of like that's exactly how it is.
Like, that's exactly it. Yeah.
That's
the job description that they give him at the very start of the movie.
You do the heavy lifting and could potentially be hurt. But if you do your job well, no one will know who you are.
Cliff's here to help me carry the load.
That's actually really true. That's a, like a really cool like idea.
I liked it.
As, like, yeah, I think that's cool. Yeah.
It's a cool little way to look at it. I like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And again, that was one of those things. That was like all of the articles and stuff that I read post movie that made me appreciate this movie a whole lot more than when I was actually in there.
Well, the more I think about it, the more I realize that like everything is interconnected and everything that seems pointless does pay off somehow.
Like, you'll like this. In the scene whilst everyone's getting attacked at the end of the driveway, Sharon Tate and friends are playing the piano and whatever at her house. The music and the songs, like the song that they were playing, was the sheet music that was found on the piano when the police went to the murder scene.
Oh, whoa. Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And just stuff like that.
That's
like,
really sad.
It's sad. Yeah. It is sad. But it's like, it's you don't need to put that detail in there. But it's so good.
But it's cool that it is. Did any of you guys stay for the after credits sequence?
Yes. Oh, you missed something. I didn't even know it was on.
So what happens? I know now that
you know what
happens. Credit scene.
Okay, it's another gold.
Yeah.
Have you
what
watched
happens?
It? Is it on? Okay.
No, I haven't seen it.
It's just another really great gold nugget of more Cliff Booth having like, you know, going a bit mad on set. So basically, it's an old Western style commercial for cigarettes, and he's selling his favorite.
Right, and it's the red apple cigarettes.
The red apple cigarettes. It's like, look, when you have a tough day like me, like my that I have, I just love to always sit back and relax at the end of the day with an old cigarette. What is it? Big red cigarette. The best, the beautiful,
red
juicy
apple.
Red apple cigarettes. Yeah, it's like they're the best in the business. And then he like fully comes up and he's like, so if you want to, you know, live the life of a celebrity, get your big apple cigarettes. And he's like, you know, put his arm around a cardboard cutout of himself in the exact same costume, one of those gags.
Oh, right.
And then,
nice.
And then as soon as like they go and cut, it's like, oh, it's disgusting effing things. I hate, like, give me a glass of water. Like, I hate the taste. It's gross. Who picked this photo? This is disgusting. I got a double chin. Like punches his cut out.
That's really funny.
And just like has a massive meltdown. It is.
That's cool.
It's just like one more little Easter egg of.
Yeah. And it's nice to tie in all the other movies with the Red Apple brand as well. Because that's like
it was good.
Tarantino's made up
brands.
Brand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good.
Well, there you go.
So.
Yeah.
That brings us to the end of the movie. What did you guys give it out of birds? Where does it land for you guys?
I reckon this is... Well, you can go first if you want.
No.
Okay. I'm going to give this a four birds. Four. Oh,
yeah. Wow.
That high.
Four birds. Four
that
birds.
That
poorly.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow.
That poorly. What do you think?
What do you think of this one, Paul? Where does it land
look,
for you?
I looking back, I'd give it three. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Three.
Yeah. I probably won't sort of watch it again, but I enjoyed the journey it's taken me on.
I feel like I need
a lot about old school
it.
Hollywood.
Nice.
Yeah.
I feel like I need to rewatch it to find out, like, find all those little gems and Easter eggs.
Well, have fun with that.
I will.
Yeah.
I will.
What about you, Jason?
I actually, like, as much as I was bored in the first 2 hours, the ending really, I actually love the ending.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, because I knew a little bit about the history, I think that made it even better. Mm. And it kind of feels like, in a weird way, like the good guys always win in Hollywood. So, you know, that's kind of what it is in this movie, and in reality, the tragedy still occurred, but I think I actually really like that in a weird kind of way. Yeah. So, for me, it's a little bit higher on retrospect because of that. It's a four for me as well.
Hey. Cool.
Yeah. I really enjoyed this movie. And, again, like as you unpack it more and more, it's like,
it's so
it gets better and better kind of thing.
Yeah. I keep finding myself appreciating it more and more as I think about it.
Yeah. I'd highly recommend people look up, like, there's a lot of articles out there and it's like Easter eggs you might've missed. And even some of the tiniest of details are real interesting.
It's kind of one of those things where it's like, for me, watching 2001 A Space Odyssey for the first time, that was, oh, man, I kind of hated that movie the first time I watched it. And then I go back and it's like research and it's like, actually, this is what that movie's about. This is what that scene's doing. It's like, oh, okay. It's actually brilliant. And I was just too stupid to realize.
Yeah, and it's like, it's that's all you are, Paul. Right. You're just too stupid to realize that this is a 4-star.
You were.
I thought movie. We had a shot at Dean. When did that, hang on, what just happened?
Oh, you come around,
I don't know what happened, but I appreciate whatever that was.
Well,
that happened, I appreciate
screw all of you. How about that?
But it's one of those things where like, I expected a completely different movie to what I got. And I love it better than what I thought I was going to get. If that makes sense.
Yeah, fair enough.
I thought I was going to start with the Manson murders and go from there. And it'll be more like of an investigation, trying to figure out what happened.
Yeah.
Because I thought that might be how Bruce Lee plays into it. Because at one point, apparently, Roman Polanski actually thought that Bruce Lee killed them. Like, that's a legit thing. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
That must be why Bruce Lee's in it. But that turns out that it's not.
Quite fascinating.
Anyway, so that's where I thought it was going to go. Didn't go that way, and I'm so glad that it went somewhere else.
Fair enough.
Good. It was good.
So that brings us to the end of this week's podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show. We are on all social media. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and we're Nerds Before Birds on all of those except for Instagram, where we're Nerds
Twitter.
Before. No, Twitter. Sorry, I'm a little bit out of it this week. On Twitter, where we're Nerds Before Bird, singular, not more.
Oh my God.
What else are we doing, Paul?
Here's the thing.
Take it away.
So Jason, it does cost you need some sleep, man.
It costs a little bit of cha-ching to run a podcast. So if you would like to support us, we do have a Patreon, which is patreon.com/nerdsbeforebirds. And you can support this stellar podcast for as little as $1 a month. And it just helps us pay our councillor bills and resolve our anger issues. So, you know, if you'd like to do that, that'd be really
working
amazing.
Working hard at it. Actually, you weren't angry this week. That's pretty
Thank
good.
Thank you. I'm too tired to be angry.
Also, you fully made us think that you were going to hate this movie.
Yeah, I know.
At work. Like,
how does it feel? You jerks?
Yeah, no, that's Shazam'd fair enough. That you. Is way back.
Whatever.
That doesn't really bother me.
Yeah.
And your opinion doesn't dictate my opinion of a movie, so.
Yeah, I know.
I was annoyed until I realized actually, I know that.
Myself and majority of the people like a movie, you won't.
No, that's not true. Because you like this movie and I like this movie, so.
I'm surprised. Yeah, but it's also artsy enough that you should like it. Like, you have to like this movie.
You
painted yourself in a corner here, mate.
I feel like I remember at the start of the podcast, Jason, saying, well, despite Paul liking it, I enjoyed it as well.
That's right. Yeah, well, that was it.
I'm liking it because I want
to throw a curveball in it and like this movie. But Paul, you still suck.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Financially, because there are a lot of subscriptions out there, that's a hard word to say, with Disney Plus on the horizon, if you can't financially support us.
Why do they do this to us?
It's wild. It makes me want to kick the VPN back on and get back into it old school style.
I'm annoyed that they're making me pay for it. Well, they're making me do it. They're doing it to me.
How dare you make us pay for
me
things.
Into this corner with the Mandalorian.
I know. Well, look, it'll be online. Don't worry about that. So if you can't financially support said podcast, which is this podcast, then even just leaving a great review on Apple Podcasts, other podcast platforms really helps us get a lot of traction. It lets other Nerds Before Birds listeners find us and also find this little paper trail we're leaving for them. Like I said earlier at the start of the podcast, if you leave us a 5-star review, I'll pretty much read out whatever you write. If you hate it, then tell me. But the preface is you got to leave a 5-star for it to be read on the podcast.
It would be really great if one week we were able to not make up a review.
What are you talking about?
I'd really just appreciate a genuine one at one point.
We might have had one for a month, but you know, it's okay. Yeah. They don't need to know.
No.
So that's pretty much it. So have a look at the Patreon.
What are we doing next week, Paul? What are we doing next week?
What are you guys doing next week?
We are doing, well, we're having a look at the terrifying sequel, It Chapter 2, and Paul is definitely looking forward to that one, aren't you?
Paul's coming, yeah.
It's going to be interesting. That's
actually what we're doing,
it.
Right?
No.
Pardon?
Why are we doing what? No.
No, we're doing that.
No.
No, we're doing that.
I'd rather
I've already organized to go see it, so I hope we're doing it.
Have fun. Yeah, we're doing that.
We're
yeah,
definitely enjoy. Doing it.
We definitely had this conversation.
Chapter 2.
Well, look, this definitely is a discussion for Chapter off the air. So, thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed the show and I hope you enjoyed the movie. Do your research.
Be just us.
It's a buy from me.
We're just going to be reviewing it and then explaining.
It's a buy from Dean as well.
Yes, Jason? That'll be it. Chapter 2.
I think
week.
Paul wants us
bye.
To wrap up.
Bye, guys.
Do you reckon Paul? Okay, see
au revoir.
You later.
Yeah, I'm bye.